Hello, primary care practitioners. Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to yet another podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners online learning environment. My name is still Dirk Pilat, and I'm still the medical director for e-learning at the college. Today's podcast was recorded to mark the release of the obesity and malnutrition course on the OLE, a vast resource full of excellent modules created under the clinical leadership of the RCGP's lead for nutrition, Rachel Pryke. I particularly am to benefit from this, as I'm certainly not the lean JHO anymore that I used to be. As you know, Professor Dame Sally Davis has cast a wary eye on overweight GPs, so now I'm even more motivated. A few days ago, I was able to get Dr. Pryke on the phone, and as usually, I first asked her to introduce herself.
Yes, hi, I'm Rachel Pryke, and I am the RCGP Clinical Lead for Nutrition.
And how did your interest develop into this particular field of general practice?
I've had a long interest in obesity in particular, and child obesity very much. It's something that I've written some books about years ago, and then that's led to a whole set of projects. A lot of feedback that I've had is how little training GPs have in obesity and nutrition in general. And so this has then led to development of some of the training resources, particularly through the e-learning, which has been a really good, exciting project.
We're obviously looking at an obesity pandemic at the moment. Is it possible, please, to just outline the scope of the problem?
Yes, what we've seen is that certainly for adults there's been a sort of a year-on-year steady increase. So the whole population is getting heavier, and at the moment we've got about two-thirds of the population who are above the ideal weight range. And what we're actually seeing, if we break down those statistics, is that people in the overweight range are probably probably about the same proportion, but we're seeing higher levels of the obese and the morbidly obese group. So those are the groups that are increasing in number, but they are also having this very complex picture of comorbidities.
And from a personal point of view, how do you explain that? How did society start getting heavy over the last few decades?
Well, we've certainly seen this trend more particularly over the last 30 years, and I think, you know, we'd obviously be very easily able to see a huge change in the sort of economic profile of countries, and also the role of the food industry. We know that a major sort of form of tax revenue for the government is the food and drinks and entertainment industry. So there's it's great to have a happy population, isn't it? But we actually need to try and balance a happy and well entertained population with a healthy population. It's not very much fun having the complex comorbidities that result from having enjoyed a lifetime of unhealthy food. So there is a balance to be struck. And what we've seen is that there isn't enough sort of attention to that balance, so the sort of marketing and the economic pressures for society to sort of consume more haven't been sort of balanced with sort of public health messages and the sort of societal steps that help us make healthy choices. Mm-hmm. So it's a very fascinating area, and we touch on some of that in one of the sessions, understanding eating behaviours and understanding eating environments.
Mm-hmm. So if you say that public health messages are just not getting through to the general population, it's pretty much a case that we are not shouting as loud as the food industry.
It isn't just the public health messages. It's things like the availability of healthy foods. What we find is that it's often the cheap, sugary, high-fat foods that are at the two-for-one offers in the supermarket and that are on the first stall that hits the eye as you go in there. And the fruit and veg that, you know, should form around a third of our diet, they're often the ones that they come across as being expensive, they're hard to store, people aren't always, you know, confident about how they might prepare those foods. So there's lots of sort of societal sort of barriers in a way that make it much easier to eat unhealthily and make it harder to eat healthily. So some of the sort of public health approaches need to be to address making healthy choices the easy choices. And I think there's a lot of very interesting work going on in those areas at the moment. Whereas at the moment, if you look at the food environment, the easy choice is often the sort of the fast food chain foods that we're very familiar with and are very, very easy.
Mm-hmm. We've been coming to the point where we are over a few decades now. Do you see any positive trend at the moment, or is it still very much doom and gloom?
Oh, no. I think there are lots of positives. And I think the fact that there's been a sea change in attitudes amongst the public. And I actually think our celebrity chefs have done a lot to put the discussion in the living room. So lots of people are much more aware of, you know, the need to think about health, that it's important. So I think the discussions are happening more commonly. And when we look at child obesity trends, there is a little bit of cautious optimism, and I say cautious optimism. We saw, in terms of child obesity, we saw some very rapid rises, certainly in slightly older children, up to 2004, and we got to the point in 2004 when the alarm bells were really ringing. We'd hit 25% obesity in children at that stage. And since then, a lot of the initiatives that have been targeted through schools, through the Change for Life program, those sorts of programs, we've actually seen plateauing, or we've seen a reduction in some of the child obesity groups and some plateauing. So at least some of the trends aren't necessarily just heading on up. But we haven't seen that encouraging trend for adults as yet, and say there are complex reasons behind that. So, I think we're having far more debate. There's much more awareness that we need societal solutions, not just, you know, blame the individual. And, you know, there's a lot of people researching in these areas. So, you know, I'm hoping actually that it's a very positive area, but we're looking at long-term solutions, not quick fixes.
So for me as a jobbing GP, what's the most important message that you would like me to give my patients?
Okay. I think when we're talking to patients in surgery, there's a lot of confusion, isn't there, about what messages we should be giving, and there's a lot of you know, sensible doubt about the, you know, whether those discussions actually produce benefits patients. Do we actually make a difference if we talk about weight? And I think it's worth reflecting on what is the actual role of the GP. There's very good evidence to say that we shouldn't be trying to deliver weight management ourselves. We've had some very sensible studies that have shown that we're not best placed to do that. However, we know that obesity has a huge impact on our workload and the comorbidities that our patients suffer. So, and patients want to discuss, they want to find help. So our role is much more about putting weight into context with the patient's overall health, and also helping our patients to be signposted to where they can get good help from. So a common sort of community approach is to try a commercial slimming group. And we know with the commercial slimming groups that some of them have gone to great lengths to get good research, to study carefully what the evidence behind their approaches, and they can offer good support. So we have got good 5 and 10% weight loss statistics for some of the commercial groups maintained, you know, for a year or more. We know that the deciding factor on effectiveness is whether people carry on attending. And what makes people carry on attending is whether they enjoy it and it feels easy and relevant to them. So from our point in perspective in primary care, one of the things is to help patients feel that tackling weight is important to them and it's doable, rather than frightening our patients to death and making them feel humiliated or ashamed or feel like a failure. So the nature, the type of conversation we have can make a big difference to how people, you know, how motivated people feel. One of the really important sort of factors with the e-learning sessions is that they actually cover the full spectrum of understanding about eating and obesity, and that other end of the spectrum, malnutrition. And it would be rather daft, wouldn't it, to learn all about half of the story and not to cover anything on the other half of the story. So I think it's important that we recognise that we've also got a lot of people in the country who are at risk of malnutrition, and that, again, GPs are in a very good position to be aware of that. And when we see a patient who might be explaining about weight loss, that we actually consider treating that weight loss as well as investigating it. We're used to seeing it as a red flag, but I think we're less familiar with seeing it as a condition that we should address. And we know that malnutrition has a very big impact on health, just in the same way that obesity does.
Dr. Rachel Prike there, giving some excellent advice. I then called Dr. Rupal Tindall, the RCGP's e-learning fellow who worked with Dr. Prike, and asked her what were the most important things that she learned while working on the course.
I found this study which looked at when we are likely to intervene particularly interesting, in the sense that apparently GPs don't talk about weight until a person has a BMI of 40 or more. This seems quite relevant to our practice, and since then I know that I've been talking about weight with people with much lower BMIs. I found the session on motivational interviewing particularly useful. I think we all know that it doesn't work, does it, to just tell somebody, go and lose weight, eat healthily. And I think to an extent, even referring to dietitians, and particularly when someone is morbidly obese, doesn't seem particularly effective. So I found some of the motivational interviewing techniques very interesting, and it's something that I've been trying to use in daily practice as a communication technique. I think that sometimes opens up a window of opportunity. It was also a good reminder about when to refer people for bariatric surgery and when to start Orlistat, when to refer to local groups like Weight Watchers and Slimming World, etc. I found the evidence for those quite interesting to read about. I mean, it seems that more and more with our daily work, obesity is the cause of so much of the illness that we see, and I think we do need to be more proactive about it. It's a difficult thing to tackle, and it has to be multifactorial. It's not going to be about the GP alone working in isolation. It's going to be about finding out what's available in the community, you know, what other resources we have to refer people to, and particularly kind of what their motivation is for wanting to lose weight, and working with them on that. I think our ongoing relationship with the patient will influence the success, perhaps, of weight loss, in the sense we kind of know them, we know their background, we know their story. So perhaps we have a bit of an insight into why they might want to lose weight and what we can say to help them on the right path.
Thank you, Rue. And this is already the end of this edition, and I would like to thank Dr. Prike and Dr. Tindall for their time. As usual, this podcast was made with Audacity, the free and open audio editor. The introductory music you heard was used with permission from Matt Bianco from the album Hideaway. My name is still Dirk Pilat. Goodbye.